We're going to stick pretty close to the text today in the book of Judges, chapter 6 and 7, and the story of Gideon. But before we get there, let's review just a moment and bring us up to the point of the story. We've been talking about zeal and the importance of zeal, and we all want to be a people zealous of good works. That's what the Lord has prepared us for. We have used the passage from Titus chapter 2 as kind of a text, a foundation passage for this study, that we should be zealous of good works. God prepared us to be zealous of good works, and these lessons are designed to help us to prepare our zeal and ignite our zeal and fuel our zeal. And so we are under the section of the outline on fueling our zeal and intensifying your courage. What is courage? How would you define courage? Well, we see from the dictionary.com, which is really taken from Random House Dictionary, very convenient site to go to for definitions. That site says the quality of mind or spirit that enables a person to face difficulty, danger, pain, etc., without fear, bravery. Now, I have highlighted there in red the words without fear, because not because I agree with them, because I don't agree with them. You often see this definition. You often see the definition of courage is to face difficulties and dangers and things like that without fear. But I added a few quotes here, and I think you've probably heard this point made before. Courage is not the absence of fear, but courage is the willingness to go ahead and act, even though you may have fear, fighting through the fear. You may even be scared to death, but you go ahead and act and do the things you need to do. Someone that says, I have not ceased being fearful, but I have ceased to let fear control me. Someone else says, fear is a reaction. Courage is a decision. And Mark Twain said, courage is resistance to fear, mastery of fear, not absence of fear. And so I think that is true, even though courage is often defined with that idea of being without fear. In truth, courage is that quality or that ability, that strength, to be able to do the things that we need to do, even though we may be fearful of it, to fight through it, to overcome it, to act even when it is difficult to act. Okay, I didn't mean to show all of those. What are some examples? What are some examples of... I was going to just show the title and then reveal them one at a time. Somehow I didn't go back and fix that slide. Okay, what are some of the examples that you can think of from the scriptures of people who acted courageously, even though maybe they feared? Esther is a good one. Esther's an excellent one. What did she do even though she was afraid or even though it might cost her?
She went to the king to protect her people.
Yes, she went before the king to make a request, didn't she? Even though it was the law that you could not go before the king unless the king summoned you to come in. And when Mordecai said, you need to approach the king, she says, I can't approach the king. I haven't seen him in a month. Okay, Chuck. Excellent. Excellent. Not on my list, but excellent example. The Christians, not named, but after Stephen's death, they continued to teach and preach, didn't they? Knowing what might be coming. Well, in fact, things were coming. The persecution had started. Ron?
Joseph. Well, he went through, he still didn't know what was going to get away from God.
Okay. He continued to follow God. He continued to do what he knew he should do and remained faithful, did not lose his faith. And so he lived a life of courage. It took courage to run away from Potiphar's wife, didn't it?
Yeah.
I mean that could have cost him dearly. But yes, very good. Bonnie?
I think Moses is a good example. I mean, he was very much fearful of going before Pharaoh. I'll be nice and say reasons why maybe he shouldn't go, you know, I can't speak well, like whatever, you know, and God gave him, he basically took care of those issues.
Yes, I won't be nice. He gave excuses. He tried to get out of it, didn't he?
He was
making all kind of excuses why he didn't want to go. You know, I can't speak, and they're not going to listen to me. And what am I going to say if they say, you know, who sent you and all that? He didn't want to do it.
One of my favorite men in the Old Testament, one of David's mighty men, his name is Benaiah. He killed a lion in the midst of a pit on a snowy day. If he wasn't afraid, he should have been.
That's right. Yeah. He didn't have enough sense maybe to be afraid. No, he was a man of courage. He killed a lion in a pit on a snowy day. Now, why the snowy day was added there by inspiration, I don't know. But he was a mighty man of valor. Chuck?
Back to Acts chapter 6, I believe the priests who were obedient to the faith took courage.
Yes, absolutely that took courage. Very good. Ron?
How about Nathan telling David that he was sinning?
That's not easy to do, is it? Tell the king to his face, you're the man. Yes?
Well, I think Paul and all he faced in his preaching and teaching.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we could do this the whole hour, but we don't have time to. But those are all excellent examples. Here's the ones I had. David with Goliath, Moses before Pharaoh, Esther, Joshua taking over the leadership of Moses. That must have been intimidating. God, in fact, told him, do not be afraid. I'm with you. Caleb standing against the majority. Nehemiah going back to build the walls. John the Baptist and rebuking Herod. Paul being stoned. I was thinking there were several things in Paul's life that we could point to, but being stoned at Lystra and then getting up and going back into the town again. I mean, what was he thinking? But he was not afraid. Or at least if he was afraid, he fought through it. He went back to finish the work he was doing before he left. Okay, and so courage. So question for consideration from our author. Why is paralyzing fear inconsistent with a strong faith in God? Why is paralyzing fear? Notice he didn't say fear. We all will have fear. But what about the fear that paralyzes us? And keeps us from paralyzing, I think the implication is, keeps us from doing what we should do. Why is paralyzing fear inconsistent with a strong faith in God?
Because if you have strong faith, God's going to hold you up and see you through.
Yeah, it shows a lack of faith in God to support, doesn't it? Is that what you're going to say, Bonnie?
Yes.
So faith says, I can do this. Faith says, I can do this. Just think of, again, the example of David and Goliath. Faith, all the other men were afraid to act against Goliath. David said, you know, in faith, I can do this. With God's help, I can do this, basically, in so many words. He quotes in the lesson Dave Ramsey that maybe you know from his radio show, fear is not a fruit of the Spirit. I like that. Fear is not a fruit of the Spirit. Paul in Galatians 5 talks about the works of the flesh and the fruit of the Spirit, and we're to put on the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, those things. But fear is not in that list, is it? God's kingdom is not for those who remain cowards, he makes this point. And so cowards will not enter the kingdom of heaven, Revelation 21. Cowardliness is a lack of faith in God. God did not create us to be timid, as he writes and encourages Timothy not to be timid. And so we ask the question today as we go through this story. We're going to go through the story now and talk about, what's his name? Gideon. Gideon, that's who we're going to talk about. How can we develop more courage? I think we can see some steps in the story of Gideon. I saw some things in studying this and thinking about this that I hadn't seen before. And so maybe you will see some things also as we think about it. How can we develop more courage? And so using Gideon as an example. So what was the condition? I've just got a series of questions here that I wrote down and that we will just walk through. And these two chapters, as we think about this story and how the story flows, what was the condition of Israel at the beginning of this chapter in Judges 6? What was Israel's condition? Anybody remember?
Deplorable.
Deplorable is a good word, isn't it? We see here in the book of Judges, what's generally going on in the book of Judges? We see this pattern of things in the book of Judges. Daryl, tell us more.
Oppression, and the Lord raises up the judge, and we get relief, and then it goes up, starts all over again.
Okay, and so we see a whole series of times when Israel shows a lack of faith. They follow the Lord for a while, and then they begin to chase after idols. And when they chase after idols, God allows an enemy to oppress them, and then they get tired of that oppression. They call out to God, and God sends a judge to deliver them, and they deliver them, and they do better for a while. Then the whole cycle starts all over again, doesn't it? And so that's the cycle that's going on. And here in this chapter, it says in the first verse, and the children of Israel, well, the last phrase of the last chapter, after Deborah and Deborah delivering Israel, says, and the land had rest for 40 years. We often see that phrase. The land had rest for 40 years. The land had rest for 80 years. The land had rest for 60 years. It goes through that, but then here we go again. Ron? Exactly. Very good. They did what was right in their eyes. So, chapter 6, verse 1, the children of Israel did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian for 7 years. And so Midian is oppressing them. And how is Midian oppressing them? This was truly severe. This would have been very, very, you think about something that's frustrating and just destroying to the nation. What does Midian do? Does Midian come and take over their farmland and grow the crops and do all the work? What does Midian do?
Let them grow the crops, and then they came and used it for their own animals.
Yeah, Midian lets them grow all the crops, spend all the work in the summertime growing the crops, and then when harvest time comes, they just come and steal everything. And so that's what they were doing. Pardon me?
What they didn't take, they destroyed.
And what they didn't take, they destroyed. And they stole the animals, too. I guess they left them just enough to reproduce a few more animals for the next year, and then they would come back and steal those. It just became a constant cycle. Well, what was the first thing that God did? In verses 7 through 10, we're going to take this in chunks. In 7 through 10, what's the first thing that God did when Israel cried out for deliverance?
He told them why.
Yeah, he told them why. How did he tell them why? He sent a prophet. That's right. He sent a prophet. And a prophet comes to them and tells them, I delivered you from the house of Egypt, from the house of bondage. I delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians, and you came into this land. But, he said, and the last part of phrase 10 is the key. What? You did not listen to my voice, did you? My American standard says, but you did not listen to my voice. And so they had gone after the idols, they had gone after the gods of the other nations, and they did not listen to his voice. Well, the next part of the story is, where was Gideon, and what was he doing when the angel of the Lord appeared to him?
He was beating out his wheat in a wine press, trying to hide it from the Midianites.
Okay, so he was harvesting his wheat, wasn't he? And he had taken his wheat, and he was trying to hide, and he was down in the wine press, beating out the wheat, trying to hide from the Midianites, who were coming through and stealing from everyone. And so what were the first words of the angel to him?
The Lord is with you.
Yeah. Mighty man of valor, the Lord is with you.
Okay, and so he says unto him, verse 12, Jehovah is with thee, thou mighty man of valor. Does that strike anybody funny?
No.
You? Chuck's laughing. Why?
Well, because he, up to this point in time, he hasn't shown valor, but he's showing this is the type of character he actually has. But he hasn't shown valor up to this point in time.
No, what's he doing?
He's hiding.
He's hiding. He's hiding. And the angel comes to him and says, you know, let me get the exact quote. The Lord is with you. Verse 12. Is that verse 12? Yeah. The Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. Well, he had not shown himself to be a mighty man of valor. And at this point, he was not a mighty man of valor, was he? Why is God saying this? Joan? God knows his heart, and God knows that with his encouragement and his help, he can be. And so God sees us often as we can be, not as we are presently. And didn't he do that with David? God looks at the heart, doesn't he? When Samuel came to Jesse's house to anoint someone to be king, who did he start with? Did he start with the youngest?
No.
Who did he start with? Start with the oldest. This has got to be the one here. Look how beautiful this boy is. Look how big and strong this boy is. That's how we look at things. That's how Israel had looked at Saul. What's the mistake that Israel made in picking Saul? They picked someone who was big and strong and powerful and stood head and shoulders above the rest of the land. That's the way man looks. Man looks at someone who is big and strong already, they think, but didn't see the heart. God looks at the heart. And I've kind of changed my view. I'm just making this up in my head because we can't prove it one way or the other. But I used to have this picture of Gideon that he was a big, strong kid, big, strong, powerful kid. But he had just let his fear overcome him, and so he's hiding. Maybe he was a big, strong kid. I don't know. He was farming, so he must have been strong at least. But I kind of picture him now just an average guy, nothing special. You know, just an average build, hard worker, yes, but just average build. Not anyone that anyone would look at and say, he's going to be the leader of the nation. He did not have that look about him. But God chose him. Okay, Ron?
And also, he was the youngest in his family.
Okay, he says he was the youngest. Ron, Chuck?
And he didn't think too highly of himself when he talked to the angel. He said, I'm of Manasseh names. He's the least of Manasseh. He's not.
Yes, let's go on and talk about that. And so he says, you know, what question did Gideon ask of the angel?
First of all, he said, if God is with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's not only afraid, he's a doubter, isn't he? He's even doubting God. Why is all this happening? If God's with us, why is this happening? Well, what was God's response in verse 14? Did God give him a long, detailed explanation of why these things were happening?
Yeah,
the angel cuts through all that and just says, go in your might and save Israel from the hand of Midian. Have I not sent you? Then in verse 15, did Gideon feel qualified? Back to that's the point that Chuck was going to make. So in verse 15, what does he say?
How am I going to do it?
Yeah, more doubt. He has to be convinced. The Lord has to push him a little bit. And so the Lord looked upon him and said, go in verse 14 and save in your might and save Israel. Verse 15, he says, O Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? How am I going to do this? Behold, my family is the poorest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house. And I think he's probably sincere here. Is he making excuses? Maybe. I don't know. I can't read for sure. I think he's probably sincere. He's thinking, we're just a poor family in this tribe. And I'm the least of the least. And is it humility? Maybe humility, a little fear, just an honest evaluation. Again, he's doing the same thing. He's looking at himself as man looks at him. Right? Instead of thinking, well, with God's help, all things are possible. With God, all things are possible. That's what the New Testament tells us. But, so he doesn't feel qualified to be the leader of Israel. What does God respond this time?
Surely I will be with you.
Surely I will be with you, and you shall smite the Midianites as one man. Surely I will be with you. Well, Gideon asked for a sign, right? He asked for a sign in verses 17 through 24. And what is the sign that God gives him?
He burns up the offering that Gideon prepares.
And so...
sends fire from heaven.
Exactly. And so Gideon goes in and makes ready a kid and unleavened cakes. And he puts it in a basket. And what does the angel tell him to do with the stuff that he had in the basket? He prepares a meal. And what does he tell him to do with it?
Put it on the rock.
Put it on a rock. Put it on a rock. And then he touches it with his staff. Is that right? Am I remembering that correctly? And the angel did. Yes. And Daryl, what happened? Yep, fire came forth, completely destroyed it, and so here is the sign that was given to him, and we'll see more than one sign that he asked for. Bonnie?
I just said, it's great that they put it on the rock so it didn't start a fire around it.
Yeah, he was safety conscious, I guess, I don't know. Smokey the Bear was whispering to him, be careful.
That's
here.
Right.
Okay. So do you think the giving of this sign would help to build his courage? I think a little bit, yeah. I think we see degrees here. I think what we see in the story is a progression of things that he's slowly building his courage. He'll ask for more than one sign. He's taking someone who has very little confidence in himself and needs to have that faith built up. And so... I believe it's going to happen, and we see it happening. God now gives Gideon a task to do. So after he builds him up a little bit and gives him a sign, he gives him a job. And that will encourage him even a little more, I believe. But he's still fearful. So what was the task that he gave him to do? Tear down the altar of Baal. And the Asherah that was next to it, that was a part of the Baal worship. And that's interesting, isn't it? Who did this belong to? The family. Okay. So here, now we go back to chapter 6, and we see that a prophet came and rebuked the people for worshiping idols. And the people all went out and immediately destroyed all their idols, right? No, not at all. It didn't seem to faze him at all, did it? Because we see the idol is still there. Even one that belongs to who? Gideon's own father has this idol. And we see how the townspeople, after the idol is destroyed, we see how the townspeople react, don't we? So they have no intention of giving up their idols. They're still totally connected to Baal. And so what does Gideon do? Yeah. Clearly, because the text says he was fearful, wasn't he? Verse 27, and Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as the Lord spoke to him. And it came to pass, because he feared his father's household and the men of the city, so that he could not do it by day, that he did it by night. And so he's still fearful. Fear's not gone yet.
But he still obeyed.
This goes back to our definition of acting even when we're fearful. And so he's making baby steps, isn't he? He's making baby steps. This is a pretty good step. I mean, he does it at night. He's fearful. He still does it at night. But he destroys the idol. Was this a big deal or not a big deal?
It's a huge deal.
It's a big deal to the city. How big a deal was it to the city, to the men of the city?
Enough that they wanted to put him to death.
Yeah, yeah. Who did this? And so they're ready to put him to death. This is a capital crime. Do we have any of those still in our country?
On the books.
That's about it. In many places, they're just on the books. This is a capital crime. And what does his father say in defense of the son? Pretty wise thing he says here. What does the father say in defense of the son, Chuck?
Let Baal defend himself.
If Baal is a god, let him defend himself. You want to put him to death? You know, let Baal defend him. And so that's pretty good, isn't it? Pretty good answer. If he is a god, let him contend. Therefore, verse 32, therefore on that day they called him Jerubbaal, which means let Baal contend with him. So they named him after this incident.
Can I ask you a question, Wilson?
Sure.
Do you think Gideon's action even helped his father by his statement to the people?
I think so. I think so. I think probably the impact of his son here probably did have. What do you think?
I think it did.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's really a lesson there for us. Do our actions help to build courage in others? When we act, his father never would have done this. But when we act, does that help to build courage in someone else? When you see someone else stepping out, when you see someone else helping someone, when you see someone else being evangelistic and talking to their neighbor, does that help to boost confidence in you? Do we ever think, if they can do it, I can do it. If they can do it with God's help, I can do it. Sure, I think so. And I think once again, Gideon is taking baby steps. But this helped Gideon too. This would have, I think, just naturally would have helped Gideon. He does this. He quote gets away with it. He's done what the Lord says, and he sees that he's been protected either by the Lord or by his father's counsel to the men, or a combination of both. Whatever, however you want to look at that. And so I think that's right. Well, in the next verse, see what I got to here on my chart. We already talked about this. When did he carry out the task? At night, but he still obeyed. We talked about that. How did Israel respond? When he blew the trumpets. Now we get to the next verses. And so we see that the Midianites and the Amalekites begin to encamp against them. Verse 34, the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. He blew the trumpet. And the people gathered. He sent messengers throughout Manasseh, and there were gathered together unto him. And he sent messengers to Asher and unto Zebulun and unto Naphtali, and they came. And so he steps out by faith. He rallies the troops. And we ask the question, was this another step in building courage? I think so. He's growing here now. He blows the trumpet and the men begin to gather. What's the next sign? God gives him another sign. He asks for another sign. So he's making his way here, getting a little stronger. What's the next sign? Pardon me?
The fleece and the dew.
Yeah, the fleece and the dew. So what was the fleece and the dew sign?
Wet to begin with, the second time dry.
Okay, and so he says he puts a fleece on the ground. Usually when the dew falls, where does it fall?
On everything.
Everything. Everything. You leave something out, it's going to get wet, right? So he puts the fleece out and says, Lord, if I wake up in the morning and there's just the fleece is only wet and the ground is dry, I'll know that this is from you. And so what happened? Well, that's what happened. He wrung it out. It was full of water. So the next day he said, well, let's just to make sure. Just to make sure. Tonight let's do the same thing except reverse it. And have the dew on everything else but the fleece be dry. What about that, Lord? And so what happens? The Lord plays along, doesn't he? He's building his faith. The Lord didn't say, you wretched one, look at all I've done for you already. The Lord's patient with him. and encouraging him, and he'll do the same for us. And so the next day it happens just according to, as he said, the fleece is dry and the ground is wet. Okay? So next we see chapter 7. And chapter 7 is one of the great passages of Scripture. It's the most famous part of the story, of course. And so the men are gathered, and he doesn't tell us how many are gathered, but we can kind of put it together from the story as it goes. How many were there originally gathered in the army? If you add the amount that were sent home and the amount that stayed, how many were in the army originally?
32,000.
And so what did God think about the size of that army?
Too many.
Why? Why did God say that there were too many?
Because he didn't want them to, when they won, he didn't want them to say it's by our own hand. It's because we were strong and we could do it.
Exactly. Verse 2, mine own. He doesn't want them to vaunt themselves up saying my own hand has saved me. Okay, exactly. And so, the next question, in what two ways did he reduce the army? So he reduces the army, first of all, by doing what? Who's ever scared, go home. If you're fearful, go home. And so two or three guys went home, didn't they? 22,000 of the 32. 22,000 went home. That leaves him 10,000. What did God say? That's about right. Now, 10,000, we can handle that.
Still too many.
He's afraid they're going to think they're the one. When you think about that, of course, even that would have been a miracle. What did they say about this army of the Midianites? Later, what does he say about the army in the valley? They're spread out like grasshoppers. I mean, they're just everywhere. There was more than 10,000 of them, undoubtedly. So that would have been a great victory, just having 10,000 defeat them. But he didn't want that. He wants a lot less than that. So what does he do the second time? This is, of course, one of the most famous parts of the story. He sends them down to the spring, and what does he tell them to do?
To drink.
Get them to go drink from the spring.
The manner of drink.
And so they divide them by what way, Chuck?
The manner of how they drank.
The manner of what they drank. They lapped like a dog, apparently picking it up in their hands and lapping like a dog. Or if they got down and drank directly, and the ones that lapped it up like a dog were how many? 300. And so he took the 300, and he sent the 9,700 home. And so now he's got 300. Do you think this was a test of Gideon's faith? Absolutely. Can you imagine? If I was Gideon, I was thinking 32,000. Now that 32,000, he knows what the other army is going to be, and God wants me to fight this other army. 32,000. That's going to be a challenge. But if with God with us, we can do that. Now God sends home 22,000. He's got 10,000. He's thinking, if I was him, I'm projecting here a little bit. If I was him, 10,000, man. Lord, that's kind of a stretch. And now he says, 300? You got to be kidding. I'm thinking, not me. I'm out of here, Jose. I mean, this is ridiculous. What are you expecting from me? Is it a test? Ron?
How do you depend on God?
A little louder, I'm sorry.
Depend on God.
Yes.
Yes.
He's He wants them to see that this is going to be totally by the hand of God and God's doing. I want you to see that this is not you, this is me. Okay? So the night before, he's given one more sign. I think each step along the way here, God gives him these signs because God keeps challenging him. God keeps encouraging him. God keeps building his faith. And so he gave him the sign, and then he said, go tear down the altar. And he did. And now he gets to gather the men, and he takes away the men. And he says, okay, I'll give you another sign now just to show you I'm still here. I'm serious about this. The build is faith. And so what is this last sign? What is the last sign?
One of the enemies had a dream of an oat cake rolling down or whatever, and it was interpreted by the other that this is showing that the hand of Gideon is going to destroy them.
Okay. Good, good. And I think Ron and then Chuck.
He went with the servant to outside the camp.
Yeah, God sent him over to the camp. He said, okay, you take your servant and go, and I want you to hear something. Chuck.
I like verse 10 because it said, but if you are afraid, go down. So the conclusion is he's still afraid.
Yeah.
Go down and see what's going to happen.
Yes, very good. Very good tie-in. And so if you're afraid, go down. Go down with Purah, your servant, down to the camp, and you shall hear what they say. And so when he went down, then he heard this dream that this guy was having. This guy had no idea that Gideon was listening to him tell the story about his dream. And so he's telling the story about a barley cake, a cake of barley bread that tumbles into the camp of Midian and came into the tent. It's interesting. I'd never thought of this before. One of the commentaries that I read says the tent here. What do you mean the tent? It's specifically the tent. What's the tent? There must have been hundreds of tents of the soldiers. Well, if this fellow is correct, he says the tent means the main tent, the tent of the general, the tent of the leaders. And so maybe that's the idea, kind of interesting phrasing. But he interprets it, this is the hand of Gideon. This is the hand of Gideon. And so this fellow even knew Gideon's name. Was that by inspiration? Was it because the army, that through the army had circulated, that there's this guy Gideon that's gathering an army? I don't know. But his dream was that this barley loaf, barley was the bread of the common people and was very typical of the Jewish people. So barley probably represents the Jews. And so here's a barley loaf tumbling into our camp and destroying the tent of our leaders is maybe the idea. Well, you know the rest of the story. There's the first bell. You know the rest of the story. How that the next day the 300 surround and they break the pitchers and they blow the trumpets. And God causes great fear to go through the army of the Midianites and the rout is on. And so you know that story. We don't have to talk about it. Ron?
Verse 15 says, when he heard the dream and interpretation, bowed to God and worshiped.
Okay, good, very good. Well, how did God build courage? Let's review a little bit, and I have eight things here. And as I thought about this story, first of all, he began with a rebuke of their past failures. If we're going to build courage, we need to realize we've made mistakes. We've messed up in the past, and we need to be sorry about those and correct them. Second of all, he gave him words of encouragement. In 6 chapter 12 and verse 14, he comes to him and tells him what he wants. He gives him words of instruction and words of encouragement. Then he gives him assurance. He promises in verse 16. He gives him instruction, but he also gives him assurance in saying, verbal assurance, surely I will be with you, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man. And so, that wasn't 5 minutes. What is he doing? Your husband's rushing the bells here, Mary. Assurance of God's help. Fourthly, he gives them a sign. The bread and the meat are consumed. Fifthly, small steps to build courage. The altar is destroyed. Another sign to continue to build him. Another test of his faith, only 300 versus all the masses that he had had to begin with. And then the final sign before the big battle, he gives him one more sign. So I think we see here encouragement, the same things he gives to us. He gives us encouragement. He rebukes our past failures. He gives us words of encouragement to be strong. He assures us of his help. People say, well, we don't see signs today. You bet we see signs. We see hundreds of them in the scriptures. We see the same signs that they saw in God's word. He can give us small steps to encourage us. He gives us encouragement over and over again if we will but just take it and be encouraged by the things that he gives to us. Okay, last word. Who wants the last word? Ron?
I can see why I need encouragement to stay in
Scripture. Yes.
To see what God's doing.
Yes, yes. And that point we could spend more time talking about, but we do see signs. We do see signs. John said many other signs did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written that you may believe. We have the same signs that they had in Scripture to tell us and to convince us and to show us he is the Christ, the Son of God. God is with us. God does care about us, and he will help us, won't he? Okay. I overwent the bell, but he rang it too soon. Either that or he rang the first one too late.